The Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the gate of the town, a man who had died was being carried out. He was his mother's only son, and she was a widow. And with her was a large crowd from the town. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came forward and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, rise." And the dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized all of them, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen among us, and God looked favorably on his people." The word about him spread throughout Judea and all the surrounding country. The Gospel of the Lord. Ponder this question. Who is more likely to lie, cheat, and steal? The poor person or the rich one? Dare I ask you to vote with your hands today? I won't. I won't have you do that. But ask for yourself honestly the answer to that question. Who is more likely to lie, cheat, and steal? The poor person or the rich one? It's tempting to think that the wealthier you are, the more likely you are to act fairly, says one author. However, a few researchers have found that luxury car drivers were more likely to cut off other motorists instead of waiting their turn at a stop sign. They also found that luxury car drivers were more likely to speed past pedestrians trying to use a crosswalk, even after making eye contact with them. Other studies have looked at different factors, and generally, they all find that upper-class individuals are worse at recognizing the emotions of others and less likely to pay attention to the people they're interacting with, for example, by using their phones to text and doodling on a piece of paper. Overall, researchers find that as people climb the social ladder, their compassionate feelings towards other people declines. And today's gospel reading has something to say about this phenomenon to us all. Luke tells a unique story when Jesus walked upon a funeral procession. We get this text only in Luke, no other gospel, and so we initially have Jesus with a huge crowd following him walking up to a city. And we hear that a man has died. And he was the only son of a widow. This is important information. It's easy for us to initially see the suffering of a woman at the loss of her son, but what we do not see is that the suffering of a widow who has lost absolutely everything. You see, in this society, a woman's survival depended on either her husband or her sons after her husband has died. So the loss of her only son, being that she is a widow, meant that she lost her entire life. There was no one to take care of her, and she had absolutely no source of income. Her life was as good as over. On top of that, we should also lift up the fact that her grief is raw, as Dr. Lucy Hogan says. You see, according to Jewish burial laws, she would have to bury her son within 24 hours of his death. That tells us that her son had just died. And so, surrounded by neighbors, she is walking in pain and sorrow. And one can only imagine the thoughts that were racing through her head. Where has my son gone? What will happen to me now? How will I survive without my son? And so it's not unreasonable to think that this unnamed widow would not have even noticed Jesus or the crowd surrounding him. She was wrapped in the fog of despair. And it's into that moment Jesus walked. Into a funeral procession, there Jesus stopped the procession. And Jesus' interaction then recalls our first story with Elijah today. And in that instance with Elijah, we saw Elijah took another widow's son who had died, and he cried out to God, throwing his body on the son who was eventually brought back to life. But here, now Jesus on the road, all that Jesus has to do is touch the casket and command the dead man, and the son sat up and began to speak. And in both instances, with Elijah and with Jesus, we hear those gathered are amazed, and they praised God. But you see, here in Luke, the story is different than with Elijah, and it's different than many other healing stories we find in the Scriptures. In contrast with many other stories of Jesus' healing, here, the widow, she never asks for help. In fact, she never says a darn thing throughout the whole story. She never sought out Jesus. Her faith was never commended. In fact, it was never mentioned. And so instead, here, we see that Luke emphasized Jesus' action. Jesus' action of compassion. Because you see here, the key player in this story is not the widow. It's not the son. It's not the crowd. In today's story, the central character is Jesus. And if Jesus is the central character here, then the crowd's response is the key to understanding this pericope. For in the story, the crowd responds to Jesus' compassion, and they say, God has looked favorably on his people. Or, in another way to translate this from the original Greek, God has come to help God's people. In that affirmation, they're saying, this guy here, this Jesus fellow, this guy who is walking around and walking into the city, he's done something completely different. We see that God has come into this person, this Jesus guy, and we recognize that in that statement, God is full of compassion. And why does that matter? Why does it matter that God is full of compassion? Well, you see, this idea of recognizing God's presence in the form of Jesus is the crux of all of Luke. Remember, the author of Luke is also the author of Acts. And they write to Theophilus, which means, any guesses? What does Theo mean? God, like theology, right? So God and Philus, love. So he's writing to the lover of God, which sometimes we interpret as ourselves. And so the author's purpose is to write an orderly account designed to explore and answer the question, who then is this Jesus? That's the whole purpose of Luke writing. Who then is this Jesus? And today, we get a deeper understanding of who this Jesus is. You see, this Jesus is the kind of guy who walked upon a funeral procession and he noticed. Jesus noticed the grief of this woman in despair. He noticed the surface loss and he noticed the deep loss of her entire life. And so into this situation, Jesus brought compassion. And notice that it wasn't empathy. It wasn't empathy. It was compassion. Jesus does not simply understand or feel another human's experiences. That's empathy. Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus has compassion. And you see, compassion means that Jesus stood with the woman who was a widow. So Jesus stood with the widow. Jesus noticed the suffering. Jesus empathized with the suffering. But then compassion goes one step further, because then Jesus worked to relieve that suffering. And that's the key distinction between compassion and empathy. And this understanding of Jesus as a compassionate person, as a compassionate God, is so important for how we understand God and for how we understand what it means to be a Christian. If we truly believe, as Luke emphasizes in his gospel, that Jesus is made of flesh, the flesh of God, then today we learn that our God is a compassionate God. And that's a pretty amazing thing. God is not a spiteful God, but God is a compassionate God. And we know that our God is compassionate not only to this widow in the story today, but to each and every one of us. For our God reminds us that there is nothing that we have to do to earn God's love. Instead, it is God's character and it is God's nature to be compassionate. And our God reminds us that it's okay. We're okay. And be kind with one another. And so, with that realization that we're given this compassion and kindness, then we are set free to respond to that compassion. And so then, if we truly believe that as Christians that we are called to both acknowledge our freedom in Christ and we are called to be agents to set others free as Christ did, then our identity becomes one of compassion. Yet I have to say, as humans, we're not very good at being compassionate. And so today I'd like to do something similar to what we did last week. And I'd like us to really own this idea of exploring compassion together. So instead of me doing all the work to make this come alive for you, here's where I need your help. So in the bulletin, pull out the quarter sheet of white paper that you found in there. And you'll find a pen in the pew in front of you. And if you don't like what we're about to do, you can thank everyone who said, "Oh, this was a great idea last week, Pastor Jason. We should do this more often." You can blame them for this one. All right, so take a moment, reflect on your week. Think about your past week, and think of a situation where you weren't so compassionate with either yourself or with another. Now remember really quick, before you jump into that, compassion is noticing the pain, personally connecting with the pain, and then responding to that pain. So look for a moment where you're lacking that response to another's pain, another person's feelings, and then jot down a few words, phrases, or a sentence about that situation on your paper. So you're looking for a moment where you weren't compassionate in the past week. If you need to broaden it to month or year because you're a pretty compassionate person, you can go ahead and do that. You can broaden it wider. But go ahead and take a moment and just jot down a few words or phrases or a sentence. So the question is, where did you notice that you were not compassionate with yourself or another past week, month, year, lifetime, if you need, because you're that compassionate? You're like Mother Teresa in the flesh. So if you need to go a lifetime, go for it. Yeah, hang on one second, Rose. We're going to give everyone just a second to finish up their thoughts. All right. And we're going to do a kind of group sharing. I thought about doing partners, but I think we can do group sharing because Rose has already started offering for us today. So does anybody want to offer up an example or two that they were thinking of a way that you weren't compassionate recently? Rose, did you have one you wanted to share?
Yeah, but okay, I can't. I wonder if it's 911. I didn't
Yeah. So Rose had a friend last week who had a stroke. And so she noticed that the person was not doing so well. And so actually Rose, she fits the bill of compassionate in this one, because she stopped, she called 911, and then they were able to come and help. So she helped to alleviate that pain. Yeah. Yeah. So a great example of being compassionate. And Val helped her too. So there was like a whole group effort going on to make sure that everyone was caring for each other there. What are there other instances we can think about not being so compassionate? Yeah. 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 So sometimes he feels a little hard-hearted towards his two-year-old. Because the two-year-old has a few different needs than maybe he has. That's a good one. That's a good one. Anybody, we want to do one more example? Yeah. Yeah. So in that moment, did everybody kind of hear that? We can think of a lot of times, and I can empathize with this too, right? We're hurrying along. She was walking out of Rite Aid, and there was somebody there asking for change. She had a whole pocket full of change, and she was kind of annoyed. She was in a hurry, and kind of in her annoyed state, kind of eventually gave some change, but was kind of wasn't the nicest that she could have been to that person. And I can think of many times where I've actually just walked past that person, right? Oh my gosh, everybody's asking for change in Chicago. This is ridiculous. I need to get home, right? Yeah. And so I think there are many times that we can think of where we're not so compassionate in our daily lives. I think we are quick to blame and judge others when a young boy falls into a gorilla pit in Ohio. We engage in negative self-talk when we think that we're too fat, we're too stupid, we're too imperfect, and we're too inadequate. We blame rape victims for wearing certain clothing. We judge single parents for raising children alone. We overlook the rising rents in Wicker Park and Bucktown that pushes out widows and the most vulnerable in our midst. We hurt the family members that we're closest to with our language and our tone. Time and time again, we show little compassion to others and to ourselves. Yet in today's gospel, we see that it is the compassion that heals. Jesus' compassion on that widow literally turned into the resurrection of her son. And while you and I are not Jesus, that might be a newsflash to some, but we are not God, you do have the potential to show compassion and bring healing. In a recent study, actually, they've got pretty solid evidence that physicians' attitudes alone directly impact healing. A positive emotional state allows the person to more fully connect with their care provider. It decreases their anxiety with what's going on, and it leads to faster recovery times. And over many studies, they've shown that compassion can contribute to less pain with some chronic conditions. And so if that research is actually correct, then my compassion and your compassion can have healing effects. So then I wonder, what would it look like for us to take seriously Jesus' example of compassion? So take a moment and look back at your piece of paper, the example of where you didn't feel so compassionate this week. And think about how you might have been a little bit more compassionate, where you would have noticed what's going on, where you had been empathetic, you had related to that pain, that suffering, and then you had responded to it. So take a moment to think of that. And I think we've got some great examples of responding in compassion already. We've got Rose and Val calling 911 in that moment. we've got us thinking about what might it be like. So how could we respond in compassion to our two-year-old? Any ideas? Dare I ask? This wouldn't be Jude, would it? No, never. Jude is our perfect little angel. Right, George? Yeah. Any ideas that you want to share? Anybody else want to offer up an idea? That two-year-old, that terrible twos, right? Yeah. So George says it's easy to enact empathy, right? You can connect with them, but not always easy because sometimes it's not the best thing to give to a two-year-old what a two-year-old wants, right? I think we can think of the Rite Aid story as well and the ways that we interact with other people, the ways that we open. And I think in that instance, right, you were responding. So you did do the response, but maybe the empathy wasn't quite there. And so that's what kind of made it feel unsettling to you, right? Connecting the empathy with that response. And I think for today, Luke wants us to really take seriously that our God is compassionate. For Jesus not only notices that widow, but he also responds to those who are on the fringes, those who are often unseen. And perhaps that's our lesson for us today. Not only for us to notice the other people around us, but to notice ourselves. To realize that our God comes to us consistently, over and over and over again, to show us the compassion. When we've lost someone who's so close and dear to us that a neighbor can come along, or a friend, or a loved one, and give a big hug and listen to what we're going through. That is compassion. And so I wonder if we can slow down our busy lives today, this week, perhaps this summer. This would be a great spiritual practice for this summer, to slow down what we're doing and to notice those widow-like people around us. And what if instead of avoiding the widow-like things inside of ourselves, we could actually acknowledge them? And then once we acknowledge the fact that we too are like that widow, we can take that empathy and turn it into compassion. We can respond to the other in need. And I wonder if it's maybe as simple as just cutting each other some slack and acknowledging that sometimes we're bad parents, we're sometimes bad parishioners, we're sometimes bad pastors, we're sometimes bad husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends and children. Sometimes we're just bad at it. And it doesn't take falling into a gorilla pit to realize that we're all human. So what if we realized that we're all human? And that's beautiful. Because our God comes to our humanity and reaches down to us and reminds us that we don't have to be God. So today, my friends, I've said all of that, and I've taken a lot longer for our sermon today to emphasize that our God is compassionate. We heard today that our compassionate Jesus walks up to a nameless, speechless widow and brings healing. And so I pray this week and in the years ahead, we might acknowledge the compassion of our God. I hope that you can recognize the humanity within yourself and with others, and then recognize the other. Notice what they're going through. Connect empathetically and respond in compassion. It was the Jewish philosopher Philo of Alexandria who said it best, I think. He said, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle." So friends, go out into the world this day and show Christ compassion. Go out into the world knowing that you're not alone. For our deeply compassionate God is with you and loves you. Amen.